Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. When the cargo ship Dali collided with and destroyed the Francis Scott Key Bridge in March of 2024, workers cleared the area of the substantial debris and reopened shipping lines just 3 months after the tragedy that killed six workers. That was considerably less time than officials had originally thought it would take. Governor Wes Moore also led the charge to get a commitment of federal funding to rebuild the bridge, which Congress and the Biden administration gave in December of 2024. At the time, the estimated cost of rebuilding the bridge was just under $2 billion, and officials predicted the project would be completed by 2028. A year later, at the end of 2025, those estimates were revised. The cost is now estimated to be more than twice the original estimate, and the completion date has been moved to the end of 2030. My first guest today is Bruce Gartner. He's the executive director of the Maryland Transportation Authority, and he joins us on Zoom. Mr. Gartner, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Oh, Tom, thanks for having me.
Let's first begin by placing you within the Department of Transportation in the state. The secretary or the acting secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation is Katie Thompson. She replaced Paul Wiedenfeld, who was the previous secretary. So she started her tenure just this month. How does the Maryland Transportation Authority fit into the complex that is under the Rubik's Cube of the Transportation Department?
Sure. Thank you, Tom. I've spent my career between both MDOT and MDTA. So we are one of the several agencies reporting to the Secretary of Transportation. The Maryland Transportation Authority, or MDTA, is responsible for all the toll facilities in the state of Maryland. The distinction that we have is that our toll revenues are separate and distinct from the Maryland Transportation Trust Fund, which is funded by the gas taxes, titling tax, MVA fees. That go in to support the other operating agencies, such as State Highway, Maryland Transit, the port, the airport, et cetera, Motor Vehicle Administration. So we have a board that the secretary is the chairman of our board, and that is where we fit into the structure.
And so your funding then comes exactly from where?
It comes from the toll revenues that are collected at the harbor crossings here in Baltimore, at the Fort McHenry Tunnel, Harbor Tunnel, I-95 corridor, the Susquehanna River Bridge, the ICC Bay Bridge, Nice Middleton Bridge, and the Hayden Bridge.
Okay, but not the gas tax. That's the
point
we want to make sure folks understand. Okay, let's start back in March of 2024 when the Dali hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Who paid for the cleanup operation that reopened the port, as I mentioned, you know, considerably quicker than a lot of people originally predicted it might take?
Right. So several sources of funding. The main federal channel was that was done by the U.S. Army Corps. So the Army Corps funded the majority of those costs. However, the Maryland Transportation Authority did apply to the Federal Highway Administration for what they call quick release emergency relief funding to support that effort. So there were $60 million in that federal highway funding that supported what we did outside of that main shipping channel, and then Transportation Authority also provided some funding that wasn't federally eligible.
And Governor Moore and the congressional delegation secured an $8 billion commitment for the rebuild of the bridge from the Biden administration. But part of that money, all of it, who knows what happens in the courts, would be repaid by insurance settlements. Is that right?
So let me clarify a couple things, because the $8 billion was part of the emergency relief authorization that Congress gave, that appropriation to that program. And within that, the federal government stipulated that they would fund 100% of the Francis Scott Key rebuild, as is done often with emergency relief projects when catastrophe happens. However, with our pursuit of the Dali owner through litigation, you know, we are planning to reimburse the federal government with all the proceeds that we get from any litigation or settlement through that process. So that's very different from any other emergency relief project in the country that happens as a result of an act of God, the hurricanes, the mudslides that happen in other states.
And can you give us an update on the status of those legal proceedings against the company that owns the Dali?
Sure. It's been moving through the process, thanks to Attorney General Brown and his team and outside litigation counsel. There's going to be dates in June to watch for when we try to strip that cap of the limitation of liability that the Dali owners have requested, that it stay under that small dollar amount of around $40 million.
So the current estimate for the rebuild cost is somewhere between $4.3 billion and $5.2 billion. Does a company like the one that owns the Dali, or any company for that matter, have the wherewithal to fund a $5.2 billion project like this? I mean, what is the reasonable expectation, the probable outcome when it comes to an actual dollar amount that the insurance people who insure the Dali company would be able to actually fork over?
So Tom, I am going to just thank the Attorney General and say that there is a team really focused on that probability and those dollar amounts that could be obtained, but I need to stay kind of in my lane with the rebuild effort, and as opposed to that litigation.
All right, fair enough. What money has what other money other than the cleanup money has been spent so far? We've made some progress when it comes to design issues about the bridge, right? But the entire design isn't quite finished yet, right?
No, but we have worked very quickly to achieve 70% design threshold for the bridge. So that's a very significant undertaking in the past 14 months. That's faster than any major bridge project you've seen across the country to do, because of the emergency nature and because of the diligence of this engineering team and the design builder that we've brought on board. So we've got you've seen some of the renderings of the Key Bridge. That's when we got to that point, we had confidence to put out that range. Now, it is still a cost range, estimated cost range for that bridge, but we achieved that 70% design very quickly. And we put in a lot of our own money in this initial stage. So even though we have an initial allocation from the federal government of over $200 million, we've been spending our insurance proceeds. That's over $350 million that we had from our insurance on our facility. So that has been what we've been spending on that design effort and some of the early work that you've seen going on in the river.
So that's insurance that the Maryland Transit Authority has, the Transportation Authority has, rather than the insurance that is held by the owners of the ship.
Correct. That has been our insurance that we have been paying premiums on for decades. Correct.
And it's interesting to me that 70% of the design is now finished. I would think, knowing nothing about bridge building or bridge design, that, if you're going to build a building, you design it and then you give it to the engineers and the construction folks and they build it. But you're saying that this is a kind of an evolving process. I mean, one doesn't just design the entire bridge all at once. Explain that process.
So actually, in the transportation industry over the past decades, there was a lot of design and then you bid and then you build. But the industry has gotten more sophisticated over time. So you can go to a process where you design the basic elements. If you have the team that's got the wherewithal to do that, and you can design and then start your building on those basic components. So the early design, you're basically making sure you're building the piers and the structures underneath the water to accommodate what that eventual design be, but you're not doing the finishing details on the surface of the roadway and some of the components. You finalize that later in the process. So that's what we need to do in this situation. That's what some other large bridges are doing as well. It's been great to have a design builder on board, because that way you get means and methods to how this project can be done. And you could also save some money. So there's elements of this project where we thought we needed to demolish the entire existing bridge in order to make way for the new bridge. But we can actually save some money by just demolishing part of it when we can, and then leaving other elements of the bridge, the old bridge, until it's cost effective to remove those when we have additional equipment in the water for the main rebuild.
So that's what you mean by means and methods. And the designer folks on this team are the ones that can tell you that kind of information.
The design build partners. So there's a designer component of the team that we procured. And then they have build components. So they're the ones that have these large, massive cranes that are very rarely used on projects, but they're being used here in Baltimore and were actually used for the salvage operation back in 2024 as well.
If you've just joined us, it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is Bruce Gartner. He's the executive director of the Maryland Transportation Authority. We're talking about rebuilding the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which, as I'm sure you recall, was destroyed in a terrible accident that killed six workers back in March of 2024. Our number, if you have a question for Mr. Gartner, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So let's talk about the reasons that the initial estimates have, you know, proven to be quite short. It was about $1.9 billion at the first glance. And now, as we mentioned, it could be as much as $5.2 billion, as well as the completion date, which originally, you know, the governor and others thought be done by 2028. Now that's been pushed up 2 years. So anybody who's been to the grocery store lately knows that, you know, things cost more than they used to. But let's talk about, you know, some of the specific reasons that that number, $5.2 billion, is so much bigger than the initial pass.
Sure. And what I'll do is I'll point to kind of three main reasons that that number is higher. But before talking about components, it's also about the estimation process. So that number that we gave and that the governor gave early on was made 13 days after the collapse of the Key Bridge. So we did a very rudimentary process, cost estimating process that we had to do to be able to enter into the emergency relief program. And that early entry was vital to that cleanup operation. So we needed to basically know we had those resources on board to clear the shipping channel and the channels on either side of the main shipping channel. Once that estimate was made based on recent bridge construction, certain estimations of height at that time, before we had gone through all the permitting and planning, and also assumptions about pier protection and what we could do in the Patapsco River without doing any engineering, without doing vessel projections of vessel sizes, things like that. So we did that estimate of the $2 billion. And then later that fall, we got the engineering team on board by doing a very quick procurement to get those folks on board. And then we worked the process, and that's where we came up with looking at a cost that accommodates two main things. So the pier protection, which is, you know, so vital to new bridge projects. I've heard the NTSB comments on standards for new bridges, and that's what we are complying with. What is often referred to as the AASHTO standards, and that's a National Highway Transportation Organization developed those standards. So that, once we went through all the vessel calculations on what current and future vessels are, and the engineers did all the things that they need to do to see what protection is needed, the cost of those, that pier protection, is over $1 billion. So right there, you know, we thought it was going to be something that would be much less than that, but we had to go through that process and do that estimation for the pier protection. Another thing that factors into safety, which is paramount on this project, is the width of the bridge across the channel. So the Patapsco River, for anybody who's familiar with it, is a very soft bottomed river. And once our team got in there and did all the geotechnical calculations, they realized, well, we need to have those main pylons, main piers supporting the bridge, pretty far out. We're 1,665 feet across that main channel, a few hundred feet more than we initially expected. That drives up the cost of the bridge. So the main span being wider, and also once we got the Coast Guard permits and we realized we were going to go from 215 to 230 feet to really be competitive and to accommodate the ships that are that are serving other ports that have 230-foot clearances. You know, these ships don't just come in and out of Baltimore. They travel up and down the East Coast. So once the Coast Guard kind of gave that determination of 230 feet, that plays into the cost. And the main span is over $1 billion more as well. So that two of those three main reasons, and then you referenced the third being the market conditions that we're facing over the past few years, and just uncertainty in markets for some of these big materials and the labor market. Another reason for the increase. Don't have a specific dollar on that because there's so many different, components to the bridge and how we are going into the market when we procure things.
And so I would assume that there's still the possibility that those costs could continue to rise. All right. We're talking about a situation of tariffs and construction material and, all sorts of things that are somewhat unpredictable, certainly with the current federal administration. So $5.2 billion may not be the final number as well. Is that right?
Well, we did try to put that range out there. So remember, as you said in the beginning, it's 4.3 to 5.2 billion. That was a fairly, I don't want to say complicated because the engineering teams are used to doing these things, but it involved a lot of different assumptions and then risk assessments. So they had to realize that there are some commodities that have more volatility. So we tried to keep to that upper range, but you still have to predict the future and future predictions are not set in stone for you yet. So we've done this best we could with the information that we've had.
Yeah. And you may need to refer me to Attorney General Brown again, but when you sue the company that owns the ship, does that number is that number as a legal matter allowed to inflate as the suit goes on? Because these suits, are going to take years and years. So suing somebody in 2025 or 2026, you might have a number, and by 2027 or 2028, that number might be different. Do you know how that works in terms of the legal process?
Just that we do have very good legal experts that we've shared our information with, and and they are considering all the costs associated with rebuilding this bridge. So that's a very likely calculation, but I would defer to the expert team that's doing that litigation for us.
So the things that are different about this bridge, you mentioned it's wider than the old bridge, it's higher than the old bridge so that bigger ships can get under it. Anything else that stands out in terms of its design? What's going to be different about this version of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which actually may not even be named the Francis Scott Key Bridge? We'll talk about that too.
Well, to your first question, this is a cable stay bridge, so it's been the kind of the most efficient, cost effective way we could proceed on this project, considering that width. For everyone that's seen the renderings, it does look very different. If you haven't seen them, there's keybridgerebuild.com on our website where we put out a lot of information about the design and the process for the bridge. In other aspects, this bridge is very similar. So it's two lanes in each direction. That is a requirement of that emergency relief program and the environmental permitting that we got. We had to basically replace the same transportation facility that was there before, but to modern standards. So other modern standards that are out there are wider shoulders. So the previous Key Bridge did not have the shoulders on either side. So we will have wider outside and inside shoulders for the bridge. We are also designing I refer to it as a fall protection, so fencing along the bridge we've been asked about that, to do that, to retrofit bridges, but we're building a brand new bridge. So we're going to be able to do that with the new Key Bridge.
What about the naming of the bridge? Where does that stand?
And that's kind of above my pay grade as well. It's, I think you've heard the governor comment. It's like, I think it's premature to talk about any of that, but it is the Francis Scott Key Bridge that we're rebuilding. So that's how we're operating.
Are there any options for car commuters to decrease the time that they spend doing without the bridge? I know there's going to be a temporary bridge constructed so the construction crews can get the materials they need out to the site of the work, but is there any option for people who have to take the two tunnels or have to take the Beltway 695, have to go out of their way because they can no longer cross the river on the bridge.
Tom, I really thank you for bringing that up, because that is probably the biggest challenge for us being here in the Baltimore area. I commute through the tunnels every day, and we are seeing that increased traffic in the tunnels. Very fortunate to be part of the Maryland Department of Transportation, because my colleagues at both MDOT headquarters, the Transit Administration, and State Highways are looking into a number of options for commuters and put out a lot of good material for the region about, you know, whether it's car incentivizing, carpooling, different options for transit that you can use in the area. But it is a significant traffic situation that we're dealt with. And unfortunately, we can't, expand the tunnels or build temporary bridges. We've looked at several different options of what we could do on an infrastructure basis. And I'll just mention a few things if there's time to do that, of what we're doing.
Yeah, we got a couple of minutes. Sure.
Sure. Everything we can on the tunnels in terms of the northbound Baltimore Harbor Tunnel, consolidating some lanes there to make that smoother. But that's probably been the biggest frustration for people, because we still have the toll plazas at the harbor tunnels, but the toll plazas are not slowing us down. It's really the tunnel there. So even removing those toll plazas, which we have a plan to do after the Key Bridge, is not going to save that much time. We have to really wait for that project, because we would impact commuters even more.
Is the port back to the volume it was doing prior to the bridge collapse?
Yeah, I think that my colleagues at the port, if they haven't put it out already, will be reporting out some good numbers that they've had. That just puts more pressure on the regional traffic, so even more important to get this bridge, back up as soon as we can, and get that support from the federal government that we're hoping for.
Yeah, because that means, the same number of trucks, unloading the stuff from the ships are driving around. Senator also Brooks, Angela also Brooks, just a couple of days ago, introduced legislation to strengthen transparency for state transportation projects. I don't know if you're familiar with her proposal. This is a bill that's co-sponsored by Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, the Transportation Project Accountability Act of 2026. Do you have any reason to believe that there's a need for such legislation? Is transparency about how money is spent an issue? Is that something that that you think has been a problem in the past?
So I can't comment on the legislation, but I would say that, as part of this project, we've been as transparent as we can be on the project. We are working very closely with Federal Highways at the staff level. They're involved in all these things, so they have some insight at that professional level. And we have been putting a lot of material out for the public to consume about how this project has moved forward. So that's just, so I'll simply keep it to, what we have been trying to do as part of the Key Bridge effort.
All right.
Bruce. And we're doing it with the Bay Bridge as well. And if your listeners that are all, focused on the public hearings we have coming up in early February regarding the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, because there are some new proposals to, to deal with that as well. And we'll have you back to talk about that.
Sounds great.
To get folks involved in that. Bruce Gartner is the executive director of the Maryland Transportation Authority. Thanks for your time. I'm grateful.
All right. Thank you, Thomas. Grateful to you as well.
And up next, Dry January. Have you sworn off alcohol for the month? Well, you're not alone. We'll talk about what happens when you go on the wagon on the other side of a quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.